parenting was nothing like what I expected. I had a wonderful dad who was a gospel preacher for more than 50 years. I had a godly mother who I think was everything a godly mother was supposed to be. I mean, Tammy said she was really challenged when we got married because my mother literally ironed my dad's handkerchiefs that he blew his nose in. And she said she was that. I have one brother that is younger than me and one sister that's younger than me. And so in many respects, I had a golden boy life. I lost my dad about 15 years ago. He was 72, and that in today's standards is a little young, but I didn't lose a sibling. We had a very good life, and I went into parenting thinking that, it's got to be easy because I saw it in them. In fact, those of you who were at the marriage seminar a year ago, Tammy and I shared part of our, and that was that when Tammy and I met, she was pregnant. She didn't even know it. And then when we started dating, my oldest son, who's not biologically my son, went on us with all our dates. That's a sure way to find out if the man really loves you, I guess, if you bring a baby along with you. We got married. And so my mom called me aside and she says, "We love Tammy." Because our first date was the end of April. We were married the end of June. 4 months was our entire dating courtship. My mom says, "We love Tammy, and of course we love little baby Josh, but are you sure you are ready for this?" And you know what Mr. 20-year-old says? "Of course. How hard can it be?" And it wasn't until just a few months after our wedding that I began to realize how hard it really was. It wasn't as easy as mom and dad made it look. And now, years down the road and having opportunity to have more conversations with them, it wasn't as easy as they made it look. Kind of reminded me of the words of former San Francisco 49er quarterback Steve Young. They said to him one time, they said, "Quarterbacking comes easy for you." And he said, "No, it doesn't. I make it look easy, maybe, but that's because I have worked and worked and worked and worked." Or as I think it was Jack Nicklaus, he had some awesome drive at the driving range before a particular tournament. And one of the guys go, "How do you do that?" And he goes, "By hitting about a million of them," right? And so parenting does not come easy. It is not something that even if you have had great teaching and you've had great examples, just comes automatically. Let me give you two illustrations of that in regards to our own marriage. As I said, Tammy and I, when we dated, we had a baby. We would often go Sunday night after church. We would take Josh in his car seat, put him in the back seat. By the way, that keeps boys and girls out of the back seat, right? Put on dating. One, you put a baby back there, you can't get in the back seat. Number two, you remind him what can potentially happen when you get in the back seat. But we would drive through and get some food. We'd go to the movie, give him a bottle. He would go to sleep. We'd actually get to watch the movie together, eat our food, and go home. But between the church building and the drive-through restaurant, Josh had himself what one might say was a little accident, okay? And his car seat wasn't one of those new space age ones, you know, with 6-point suspension and all these kind of things. It was really a plastic bucket with a little foam pad in it. And we're a little too close to get descriptive, but let's just put it this way. Josh liquefied and filled that bucket. So we went to Tammy's house. She grabbed him, you know, like he was a scientific experiment, you know, like this. Took him inside, and I am left as a single guy with this bucket of stuff. So I unsnapped it, and I get it out in the driveway, and I've got the hose, because I'm thinking this is an industrial situation here. If it had been post-80s, we probably would have had to bring a hazmat in, because it all went out into the street. But I'm hosing it off, and you know what I thought? This is not what dating is supposed to look like. So as I got it all cleaned up, we got everything taken care of. Now let's fast forward. Now I have 5 kids. 5 kids who all get the vomiting flu in our 700-square-foot house that has one bathroom. Oh, and did I mention Tammy has the vomiting flu along with them. I walk into the bathroom. Our youngest son, Daniel, is at the toilet. He is throwing up, and Tammy is there behind him, not comforting him. She's leaning over him, throwing up into the same toilet, too. I go in to check on my third oldest son, bed, doing his imitation of Old Faithful, if it was a vomit. He is asleep, and he is spewing it into the ceiling like a fountain. Everybody is sick, and I'm not exaggerating when I say this. There is stuff on not just the floor and the walls. There is stuff on the ceiling. It's the, I call it the Bassmaster vomiting. You know how they always have Bassmaster, that bass comes up out of the water going like this? That's how I think they were all throwing up. And you can't just take those linens and throw them in the laundry because they're not all liquid. Does that make, is that descriptive enough? So without becoming more repulsive, I'm standing in my tidy whities in the backyard, these hanging over the clothesline, and I'm back to hosing it off. And I went, this is not what parenting was supposed to be. I realized how wise my mother was, because I was not ready for this. And parenting is that way. And I believe, this is me, and Tammy's not here to rebut, but I believe that it is especially difficult for dads, because we do carry a unique responsibility. And moms work hard. They are the cook. They are the laundry lady. They are the teacher. They are the nurse. All those kind of things. Maybe it's different for you, but every night I go to bed with the burden of that fathering responsibility on my shoulders. And it continues on even with a youngest who is almost 35 and an oldest who is 43. My father responsibility weighs heavily on me. And so I recognize how difficult that is, and I want to share a few things. And if nothing else, I hope that you'll go through it and go, here's what Wayne did, let's not. Okay? Anybody in here not have any children? And I don't mean at home, but at all? Okay. I told him we were not going to try to talk him out of having kids. But sometimes that happens. I remember that when we had five kids, most of our friends were a little younger than us and certainly behind us in having kids, and they said every time that they had an urge to have kids, they would come to our house, and that cured it. So I hope this doesn't cure you on the parenting in that, but let's talk about some things that I'm sure that most of us can agree with, and that is the fact that parenting, specifically as being the dad or daddy, is constantly new steps. There is always some new situation, some new circumstance, some new problem. And at least it was for me that sometimes I simply said, man, I thought I had this thing all figured out, and it's something particularly new. A frequent statement when we faced situations with our children between Tammy and I was this: this was not in the manual. Things that we expected happened, but the things that we didn't expect most certainly were the ones that were grander than that. But being a father is more than simply biology. You know, there used to be an old bumper sticker, you know, anybody can be a father, but it takes someone special to be a dad. Because the biology of it is a result of biology, but the fathering takes something far more intentional. So where do we go when we talk about, we talked about God as a father, but when we talk about biblical advice about marriage and parenting, most frequently we go to the Apostle Paul, which I found extremely unusual because he was never married and, as far as we know, had no kids. In fact, one guy pointed out to me, we was meeting with an author of a book on fathering this week about a different project, and he said, you know, I always think it's funny that the Apostle Paul tells young men who have those sexual urges and desires, he says, it's better for you to marry than to burn in your passion unfulfilled. He said, clearly, the statement of a man who isn't married. Think about that just a little bit. That's not always a resolution to your problem. But the Apostle Paul actually describes himself in the terms of being a parent. Listen to what he says, and I think it describes parenting in general. And then we're going to build something a little more specific regarding fathers. In 1 Thessalonians chapter 2, Paul writes beginning in verse 7. Listen to these parenting characteristics. He says, "But we prove to be gentle amongst you, as a nursing mother tenderly cares for her children. Having thus a fond affection for you, we were well pleased to impart to you not only the gospel, but also our own lives, because you had become very dear to us. You recall, brethren, our labor, our hardship, how working night and day so as not to be a burden to any of you, we proclaim to you the gospel of God, your witnesses, and so is God, how devoutly, uprightly, and blamelessly we behave towards you believers, just as you know how we were exhorting and encouraging, imploring each one of you as a father would his own children." He starts with a mother, he ends with a father. But did you hear all of those different descriptors? I just wrote them down here in the margin of my Bible. He says, "We cared for you, we nourished you, we loved you, we taught you, we sacrificed for you, we lived like an example, we were available for you," with that end objective of what? Walking worthy, right? He says, "We walked worthy," and that's what we wanted for and from you, to walk worthy before God. And so that's our parenting responsibility. We'll talk a little bit later today about kind of the seasons of parenting. And for dads, that's hard. It's especially hard for dads like me who are a little bit controlling. That'd be like if Noah had said, "It looks like it might rain." Okay? I am overly controlling. And what I found is that there was a place to be in charge, but there were places that I needed to move from being one who wrangled cats and turtles at the same time to the one who was actually mentoring and to the one who ultimately was counseling even after they moved out. And so there are phases of being a father, and we're going to deal a little bit about them. But for a real model for fathering, and by the way, save God himself, it is hard to find good parents in Scripture. I mean, it really is. If you start, there's a lot of stories. We'll talk more about that in a bit. But if we're going to pick a father, let's pick somebody who's actually described as a father, and not only the father who has a son, but the father of a nation. And of course, I'm talking about Abraham. Abraham, not the model father, okay? And, you know, the handmaiden will tell you about that sometime. But he was not the perfect father, not the best husband, but he is the father of a nation. And there's a particular story about him that I think gives you and I some real guidance as far as being parents. Let's just recap the story, and I don't mean to demean or to talk down to you as if you don't know the Bible story, but it's important for us to get the context. Abraham is an aged man, near 100 years of age, and God comes to him, and he says, "You and your wife don't have any children." He says, "But you're going to. Even though you're aged and your wife Sarah is aged, you're going to have a child," and that seems to be quite unbelievable. Even in this day of modern medicine, we find a guy that was 100 years old, and his wife at that age, we would find remarkable, even with those advancements, that they would be expecting a child. And so Abraham tells his wife, and you know, she says, "Well, that makes all the sense." No, she laughs at the whole situation, right? But just as God had promised, he gave Abraham and Sarah a son. Now, in the meantime, or prior to that, Abraham and Sarah said, "It's a great plan, God, but I'm not sure you can pull it off by yourself. So we'll see if we can't help you along the way." And that's the whole story of the handmaiden and Ishmael and all of that mess that went along with it. But God fulfilled his promise the way he intended to, and Sarah conceived and gave birth to a son. And his name is Isaac. He is the son of promise. That's not just a promised son, but he was significant in fulfilling all the promises that God had given to Abraham, that you would be a great nation, that you would have a land that was yours, and that ultimately through your seed, all of the nations of the world should be blessed. And Isaac is going to be an important part of that, even if maybe Abraham didn't fully understand the significance and the consequence of all of that. Now, as a father of five sons, I can tell you that just because I have four sons and five children, just because I have four sons, I don't think less of one other than the others. Now, I mean, there have been times that I, in using Bible terminology, I fixed my gaze on one of them because they were in the doghouse. But I wouldn't say take any of my sons because I've got plenty. However, if you're wanting one, I've got one I'll give you right now. But that's just a different story altogether. But here's the thing. Abraham's son is as precious to him as any son that you can imagine. He is his son. He is a son of his old age when his years for having a son are past. And this is a son that is going to be significant to God's grand plan. Beautiful story. Until God interrupts it, as he often does. God comes to Abraham and he says, Abraham, he says, I want you to take your son. In fact, he goes on to say, your only son. He goes on to say, your only son that you love. That's the one that I gave you, Isaac. In other words, there's no Ishmael in this. Because Abraham could quickly say, hey, Ishmael's the one I'm going to sacrifice. He says, I want to be real clear on it. It's your son. It's your only son. It's the son you love. And in parentheses, the son that I gave you and that is going to be of long-lasting consequence. And I want you to sacrifice him. Now, for those of us that are familiar with the story, we kind of read right past that. But this is gigantic. First of all, Abraham had come from a culture in which the sacrificing of children was not uncommon to pagan gods. But Abraham is in no way, shape, or form one who adheres to those gods and to those principles. In other words, it was as outlandish of a request as had God come to any one of us today and said, I want you to execute your child on an altar of sacrifice. So here's this son, his only son, the son he loves, and God's saying, I want you to do the unthinkable. I suppose, and the text does not give it, but I suppose that like any father, Abraham goes, surely I have misunderstood this. I mean, I often wonder about the conversations that Abraham has with Sarah. Sarah, I was out in the wilderness there, and God came to me. And he told me that I should circumcise myself. And she says, what? He goes, let me explain what that is. And she goes, are you sure you got that right? That doesn't sound like something. Now he comes back and he goes, hey, guess what? I was out in the wilderness. God told me you're going to conceive and bear a son. And she goes, is this going to be like the circumcision thing? Do you know what you're talking about? You've been out in the heat. Now he comes back and says, what? Hey, I was out in the wilderness, God spoke to me, I'm supposed to take Isaac and I'm supposed to execute him as a sacrificial animal. She goes, I'm not leaving you out of the house. I don't know how that conversation went, but this is unthinkable in a world in which Abraham keeps coming back with some pretty outlandish stories. But nevertheless, the text tells us that Abraham takes his son along with some servants. They go to the place of worship where the sacrifice will take place. They begin to make their way. They have the stuff for the fire and all that's necessary for the sacrifice. And Isaac notices that, he notices that there's no animal. No doubt he has. He says, hey, Dad, guess what? We forgot the lantern. Like we pack every time. Hey, Father, we forgot the tent, which we pack every time. Hey, Father, we forgot the Dinty Moore stew, which we pack every time. I mean, he's been through this shopping list before. He goes, couldn't help but notice that we're going to sacrifice an animal, and I know you're old, but we have forgot the animal. And Abraham, in those very familiar words of faith, says, "The Lord will provide." And he goes up the mountain with the boy. He builds the altar. He lays the sticks on it. He starts the fire. He binds his son Isaac. He lays him up on the altar. He puts his hand down. He lifts up the knife that is going to make the death blow. And that Lord, through his angel, stops him. And another sacrifice is available. And Isaac is spared. Abraham's faith is demonstrated. Now, I don't know how it was when you were small, but when I saw pictures, quote unquote, didn't have any cameras, but if I see illustrations of that event, I always saw a long gray-haired, long gray-bearded Abraham, along with him this small towhead. Why he always looked like Opie from Andy Griffith, I don't know. Not really a Jewish complexion there, but always this tow-headed boy, and they were walking hand in hand. I'm like, that's a pretty powerful story. And to lay that young man up on there, maybe at 6, 8, 9 years of age. Well, if I understand it correctly, and I've had it corroborated by some people that are much better students of the text than I am, that probably Isaac was 18 at the youngest. Now, I don't know how the relationship was with your dad, but my dad told me when I was a young man, and my dad was always an old man to me because he was always older than me. He told me if it ever got in my mind that I thought I could take him, I was welcome to try. And once I did, big mistake, okay? And so even though my boys are all taller than me and my oldest son is much bigger than me, I made it quite clear, if you think you can take me, you just try. Now, that's called ignorance, because ignorance makes you brave. But I got a 100-year-old man, and I got a 30-year-old man. When a 100-year-old man would attempt to tie up a young 30-year-old man who's probably in the prime of his physical condition, that's not going to happen. Right? It's just not going to happen. There's no way that he could force him to be tied up. Can you imagine him wrestling Isaac to the ground, putting his arms behind him, tying him up, lifting him up and putting him on the altar, holding him down with one hand as he drew the death blade with the other? How's that happen? Although the story is used by the writer of Hebrews to describe the great faith of Abraham, I believe the story speaks of a grander faith than that. And it is the faith of Isaac. It is Isaac who allowed himself to be sacrificed without hearing the call of God and without knowing the outcome. At least Abraham said, "I know what God told me, and I'm going to be to God." But Isaac never heard it. He only heard the words of his father. And though I suppose, as a father, that Abraham didn't understand everything that was going to happen when he said, "The Lord will provide," he at least had that deliberate intent and that deliberate belief. But Isaac is a passive individual who's going to serve as the centerpiece of this story. How is it that Abraham, if you will, got Isaac to surrender himself on an altar? And what does that help us in when we talk about us passing faith onto our children? Let's see if we can't identify a few things from the story that will help. First of all, the text tells us that Abraham and Isaac are on their way, and in two different places the text says, and they walked together. I am confident that our availability in the life of our children as fathers is essential to us accomplishing our ultimate purpose. There are dads who are providing financially for their children. They're providing recreationally for their children. They're at the ball games with their children. They're at the play or the program with their children. But many of those are not walking with their children. They are stopping in. It is especially hard as fathers because, at least in a traditional model, mom is at home with the kids and dad goes to work. That was the way it was for the first 16 years of our married life. Before, as my kids put it, I didn't have a job anymore. I went into ministry. But for me, Tammy spent the majority of time. And so dad would jump in. It was throw the ball to the little man and give that princess of mine a little hug, give a few orders and back up what mom said during the day. That was all of my process. And then they went to bed. So realistically, from 6 to 8, that was the time that I spent with them until at least the weekend. Sundays were a church day for us, which meant they were in Bible class and worship was simply putting them down by their mother who could keep them in control. Then when I went into full ministry, I said, she can't call on me. Now I'm up here in the pulpit. So that worked out good for me. And so Saturdays were days for fixing the car and mowing the lawn, running the errands and maybe some other activity. And so my actual time with them was limited. And so we must find ways as fathers to walk with our children. We need to be available. We need to be those that are, as it is a young man and his father who are walking in the dark. Dad holds the flashlight and the son knows that he can reach up and hold on to dad's hand. Dad is there. It doesn't mean you're always going to be present in geography, but certainly needs to be seen where they recognize that we are ever present. And so Abraham and Isaac walked together, and you and I, if we're going to pass a faith on to the next generation, we're going to need to walk with them. Not just in our world, and not just in their world, but in the world together. The second thing is that Abraham listened. When Isaac spoke to his father, Abraham says twice to Isaac and once to God, "Here I am." Abraham was willing to listen to God when he said it, but he also is willing to listen to Isaac. As a father who thought of himself as really smart and certainly thought of his children as not as smart as him from the standpoint of their experiences, I quit speak, to teach, to talk. More important is the listening to them, listening to their concern, listening to their questions, listening to their life circumstances, listening to their problems. Because often we begin to speak and we never speak to the thing that is so important to them. It needs to be that perhaps we listen by asking questions beyond simply, "How was your day?" But when they come in and they share a difficulty, instead of jumping into it, say, "Well, how does that make you feel?" Or, "How did you handle that situation?" Or, "Is there a way that I can help in that?" Listening is, we'll reiterate it later, but listening is one of the most important part of this communication process. And as dads who are good at times at barking out the orders, sometimes, if you will, we need to listen to the troops. Now, I will admit, it might be like those guys in the Civil War, soldiers of the South, things were getting difficult. And one of the guys came up, he says, Captain, the men, we've been a long time since we've been able to put on new clothes. And he says, "I'll just tell you," he says, "right now, it's about time for us, we need to do some changing because, we can't, supplies are low. We don't got much socks, we ain't got hardly any underwear, we ain't got no new uniforms for anybody, just going to have to endure." And about a week later, the guy came back and, "Man," he says, "the troops are there in big trouble." He says, morale is at its lowest. They want to know if they can change at least their socks. And he goes, I told you, we don't have socks to spare. You're just gonna... So finally, after about a month, he goes, I don't think the guys are going to fight anymore. He says, they're unwilling to. And he says, why? And he says, can they at least change your socks? And he says, fine. He says, Diane, you change with Wayne, and Wayne, you change. I mean, you know, we got to listen to what the troops are saying. By the way, that's a way homer. You'll get it on the way. Diane and I wear the same size socks. That's the only reason I can use that. But we need to listen to what's going on in the world before we tell them what they're supposed to do with it. Now, thirdly, Abraham uses moments as teachable opportunities. And I want to clarify the difference between a teachable opportunity and a telling opportunity. It wasn't just a matter of which Abraham says to Isaac, I said, the Lord will provide. And here's why I know that. Because I don't believe that Abraham knew exactly what was going to happen. I have a feeling that he trusted in the word of God, and he expected that when he got to that top of the mountain, he was going to do the unthinkable. I have no reason to believe that Abraham was thinking, I'm just going through the motions. God's going to interrupt this. But as a father, even though that's what he believed, I got to believe that he was also thinking, there's got to be a way out of this. In other words, it was a teachable moment even when Abraham didn't know exactly what was happening. As a dad who did more talking than listening, I often wanted to show myself to be the one who understood everything there was about auto mechanics, about personal electronics, about relationships. If you needed to know something on home repairs, call me. I remind you, there was no YouTube when I was raising my kids. Now, hey dad, can you help me with a starter, is followed with, never mind, I found a YouTube about it. So I'm slowly being gotten rid of. But there is a place for us to say what we know and to say, I don't know. I think fathers that show that kind of vulnerability teach more than the father who comes across as the expert in every single thing. That doesn't mean that a great dad is the one who goes, I don't know. I don't know. I don't know. I mean, at some point you're going to have to tell them something. But it is important that we as fathers fess up to when we don't know or when we were wrong. For example, the ability to apologize to our children when we lost our temper, when we were unreasonable in our demand, when we ourselves made a mistake that we were so adamant that our children not make, is to be able to say, I was wrong in that. I'm sorry for that. I don't know. Let's see if we can't find a way through and out of this. And then the fourth thing is that Abraham, and he did so not only in his words, but in his deeds, he trusted God. If you think you're going to be good enough father that you're going to father on your own, you're mistaken. If you think you're going to father on your own, you're going to need the help of that mother to be the best father that you can be, but more importantly, you're going to be all of this. You will never understand. I don't know. I can't figure this one out. I've tried everything in my power to find a place to say I trust in God. And so, if we had to draw from that, I would simply put it this. Isaac trusted a father who put his trust in the Father. When our children see that our trust is not in our job, in our expertise, in our finances, in our physicality, but that our trust is in God, we will have done the most that we can do to lead our children in that way. Now, let's talk just for a moment about mom, as it is, I think, important. You are partners in parenting. In fact, partnering is what made you parents. Think about that just for a little bit, right? And so, I remember when Tammy and I, when Tammy was pregnant with our fifth, we went to the mall. The mall was actually a place to go that was free because you could walk the mall, look the stores, and the only thing you had to worry about was saying, no, we're not getting that today. No, we're not getting that today. No, we're not getting that. But I remember we were walking along there, and here is Tammy. She's 6, 7, maybe 8 months pregnant. Four other little urchins around her, and a lady walked by and looked at Tammy with this, you poor thing, look on her face. And the same moment she turned her gaze to me with this, you dirty dog, look on her face. I told Tammy, I said, I get that look one more time from somebody. I'm getting you a big t-shirt, and it'll be big because you're pregnant, that says consenting adult. Right? In other words, it took two to tango. It's going to take two to parent. And don't believe that mom doesn't play an important role. You want to be very careful that you remain partners in parenting. And not just for the sake of parenting, but for the sake of partnership. As your children grow older, they will go out. And you will be left of you. Now, Tammy and I never had in the early years time without kids, other than a night or two here and there. We're enjoying more of our honeymoon now. But the fact is that eventually you'll get where it's you and your spouse, your wife, and you need to have remained partners through all of that. Otherwise, you will find that the children actually grew between you. And that when they're gone, there is a great gap that is left between you. And so that partnership in parenting has to continue. The relationship with your wife. I mentioned that moment when my dad said, if you ever think that you're big enough, you're welcome to give it a try. It wasn't that deliberate in my mind, but I was about 17. And I, in no uncertain terms, told my mother what I thought about her and her ability to make a quality decision. She didn't say a thing. I remember in my mind, just like a woman, not to know. Thought I had done my duty. Went off to my room a little bit. My father came home, and I don't know if any of you watch those Marvel movies, that character Iron Man. Iron Man's got this ability that he can put out his hand like that, and boom, I mean, this radiating power comes. That was not Iron Man. That was my dad that invented that. My dad walked into the room. He did not ever touch me. But he put his hand out and I felt it. Boom. I backed into the corner of my room and my backside attempted to grow feet as it was trying to crawl me out of that. And he looked me square in the eye and said, if you ever talk to, listen carefully, my wife that way again, you're out of here. Your wife? I thought I was talking to my mom. He made it quite clear that their partnership took precedence over us, always. That doesn't mean that at times didn't have to sacrifice, she didn't have to sacrifice, but if you will, this was most important. And when it came, push came to shove, even though he didn't push or shove, it was his wife before she was my mother. And that is a fundamental essential, not only for your parenting, but also for your relationship for the long haul. And so I want to encourage you to celebrate your wife in the parenting model. I want you to rely on your wife. I want you to revere her. I want her to be laid before, if you have sons, this is what you are looking for when you look for a wife. But if you degrade her, if you demean her, if you constantly disagree with her, if you diss on her to the children, they will look for someone different than her, and probably down deep inside, you know that's not what you want them to do. And if you have daughters, you want to lay your wife before her as this is what you are to be. She is the example that you can follow as one who follows Jesus. It is important for you to maintain that relationship. And if for no other reason, then she can have the conversations with your daughter about girl things that we don't want to talk to and have a conversation about. She's really important. Okay, just a couple of minutes here. I want to just, we'll do something that we're going to come back in our second breakout session and I'll elaborate on. Particular role that you play in regards to the relationship between a son, if you will, man to man, and one that you have between your daughter, a father to a daughter, different than mom has with the children. It is that partnership that allows you to deal with both dynamics there. Simply put, went to the Grand Canyon. As I've gotten older, heights have bothered me. I used to climb a tree, watch it, feel it sway in the wind, didn't bother me the older I get. We got to the Grand Canyon. If you've never been there, it's one big hole in the ground. I mean, it is a big hole in the ground. And they had, though it was still well into the safe zone, they had this rickety old fence there, and I am eking my way up to it to look over, and my oldest puts his hand square in the middle of my back and shoves me up against that fence. Now, I was at no point in time near death, but he was. Because I turned and told him, I said, this is not dead son, not Wayne to Josh, man to man. You ever do that again, I'll kill you. With my bare hands and nobody will find the body. Tammy wouldn't talk that way, though she did knock out one of our kids, and I'll save that story till after lunch. But Tammy didn't deal with our kids, with our boys that way, though she could have. In fact, I kept warning them, don't do it. She'll kill you. But my daughter didn't deal with her the same way. She would bat her eyes. Those brown eyes looked at me like, Daddy, I'm your princess. To which Tammy would interrupt the conversation and go, listen, sister, I know what you're up to. That's not happening. That partnership was essential. Those dynamics in raising both boys and girls as each of us handled it differently. And we'll talk a little bit more about that when we come back after lunch or in our breakout after lunch. I said this at the marriage seminar and I say it to guys wherever we go. I appreciate you coming out on a Saturday. I mean, I know today doesn't promise to be the most beautiful weather that Southern Florida ever offers with some rain in the forecast this afternoon. But I know that there are a lot of things, and for some of you who are older and maybe even your kids have moved out or soon will be or maybe are at college to come and listen to, I got it. I already did that. I have cleaned my puke. I know what you're talking about, but I appreciate you being here. It's an encouragement to me. It also speaks to individuals who not only are caring about their own families, but have the opportunity and ability to share some of these things with others. So thank you for being here.